people will begin to turn out. Often children are employed to bring the dogs, or and they will bring them anyhow they can, because families have seen rabies, they're frightened of rabies, and they're very grateful for rabies vaccination campaigns coming through.
This is Louisa Beale with Radio Tacoma. This is part two of a three-part series about World Rabies Day, which is September 28th. Rabies is one of the deadliest diseases on the planet. Human rabies caused by dog bites has the highest case fatality rate of any known infectious disease. Each year, an estimated 60,000 people die from rabies, the majority caused by a dog bite. The deaths are mostly in Africa, India, and other parts of Asia, and one half of the deaths occur in children under the age of 15. The Paul G. Allen School for Global Animal Health at Washington State University is working with international partners to eliminate rabies as a cause of human suffering and death. Research conducted through the Rabies Free Africa aims to reduce the cost and increase the efficiency and effectiveness of mass dog rabies vaccination programs. My guests today are Dr. Felix Lancaster, working with Rabies Free Tanzania, and Dr. Thumbi Mwangi, working with Rabies Free Kenya.
Hi, Louisa. My name's Felix Lancaster. I'm a veterinarian, and I have a faculty position at Washington State University, but I'm based full-time in East Africa, where I work on infectious diseases of people, livestock, and wildlife, and with particular interest in diseases that have an impact on livelihoods and public health, such as rabies.
Thank you.
Thumbi Mwangi is my name. I'm an associate professor at Washington State University. I am also a veterinarian by training and an infectious disease epidemiologist. I mainly work on zoonosis and the linkages between animal health and human health, with the idea of working on interventions that can improve human health that are focused on livestock or animals. Of particular interest, obviously, is the work that I do on rabies elimination, helping Kenya and other East African countries on how to make 0 by 30 a reality.
Perfect. Thank you. Thank you. I'm just very curious about what rabies looks like in East Africa. What does it look like on the ground? I mean, have you seen people who have contracted rabies?
So when talking about rabies, I think my first encounter post my training as a veterinarian was rabies case in a cow. And I was working on a project looking at just infectious diseases of cows. And one of them had been bitten by a dog, and we lost the animal. And then soon after, I got opportunities to, unfortunately, see a patient, a young boy who had gotten rabies out of a bite from a dog. And knowing that at the clinical stage, there's nothing we could do. It's obviously very discouraging knowing that you could have prevented it, but once you've got the clinical signs, you can only watch and see. And soon after, obviously, the child passed on. So that is just one of many cases that we have seen around the impact that rabies has on people, but also on families and also on communities. And for Kenya, if I speak for Kenya, we estimate we lose up to 1,000 to 2,000 people every year, and many of them are young children below 15 years dying out of a preventable disease, in this case, rabies.
Dr. Lancaster.
So the interesting thing about, well, rabies in East Africa and other areas where it is endemic is it's primarily in the domestic dog population, as opposed to in the wildlife population, which is what a lot of people think it is. A lot of people erroneously think it will be in the wildlife, especially because in Western Europe and Eastern Europe and in the United States, for example, rabies is driven by wild carnivores like raccoons and skunks and the red fox. But in Africa and Asia, where human rabies remains a major problem, it's the domestic dogs that are the driving force behind the rabies problem. And so in terms of what does rabies look like in these countries, it's the domestic dog that one most often sees as being infected with rabies. And the stories that you hear are of a rabid dog wandering through a village and randomly biting other dogs or people or livestock. And as Thumbi has mentioned, quite commonly we see animals, domestic animals like cattle and sheep and goat with rabies that they've contracted it from domestic dogs. And these cases of rabies in livestock can be very costly to farmers and livestock owners who don't have very many animals in their herd, and can cause major sort of livelihood problems for people commonly in the rural areas.
So it sounds like that if you can control the rabies in dogs, that's going to go a long way to controlling it in the humans and livestock. Is that true?
Absolutely. So controlling, if you want to control rabies in wildlife, you want to control rabies in humans, you want to control rabies in livestock, then you need to control it first and foremost in the domestic dogs. Over 99% of human cases of rabies are caused by bites from domestic dogs. And so to eliminate human rabies in areas like Africa and Asia, to do that, you need to first tackle rabies in the domestic dog.
What research is going on in East Africa?
So Washington State University has two stations in East Africa. We have a base in Kenya and we have a base in Tanzania. And in both areas, we're doing joined up research work on the sort of optimization of how mass dog vaccinations can be carried out more cost effectively. And so the particular research questions we are working on might be slightly different, but they're all targeting the same overarching objective, which is to optimize the delivery of mass dog vaccination interventions. So once the actual work of rolling out national rabies elimination programs is carried out, then it will be done in Tanzania and Kenya in a very similar fashion. But what we are working on in Tanzania and what Thumbi's teams are working on in Kenya is just looking at slightly different questions about how that optimization can take place and can be improved. For example, in Tanzania, we are looking at ways that the vaccines themselves can be delivered to remote areas where it's hard to get vaccines to people, where there's very little power and very few refrigeration units to keep vaccines cool. So we're looking at different delivery strategies and comparing them to see whether, for example, a decentralized approach in which vaccines are stored in villages and used by communities themselves is a more effective approach to delivering mass dog vaccination than a centralized approach where vaccines are stored within one town and delivered to villages by teams. So we're carrying out a randomized controlled trial comparing those two delivery strategies to see which is the most effective. And that's one question that we in Tanzania are looking at. And the answers that we will come up with will be complementary to the ones that Thumbi's team are working on in Kenya.
As soon as you've got these kind of strategies, you realize there's a lot of also unknowns around how to implement those kind of programs. So for instance, because dogs are not easily registered, you do not know the exact number of dogs that are in a certain area. And so there's a science of determining the population of dogs in a specific area. Secondly, how do you, if you know you have 100,000 dogs, how do you achieve at least vaccinating 70,000 of them? Sort of the magic number that if you vaccinate up 70%, you are able to break the transmission cycles within the dogs. So how to bring those dogs that are owned by different people that live in different places in, say, common areas where you can effectively have a mass dog vaccination campaign in itself is also a really interesting question. And so part of the work that we do as Washington State University is to find ways that we can optimize this intervention. So as we say, government is rolling out mass dog vaccinations. We are able to help with estimating what number of dogs they have got in an area without doing a census. And also having ways in which you can optimize people hearing about the mass dog vaccination and bringing their dogs for vaccination. That's just one area, as one of the strategies that we use. And so it is the science of implementation of a program, from the development of the strategy to the delivery of the interventions, that then you measure the impact of. I could add on to that and say, the learning that we get from Felix's work will be applicable in Kenya, because a big part of Kenya is exactly like how the places that Felix is working in. And similarly, the places that I'm working with that have a few higher population densities, the results that you get out of them would actually be applicable in large parts of Tanzania as well. And even to extend it, even though our bases are within Tanzania and Kenya, we are influencing the way rabies elimination work is happening in Uganda, in Tanzania, and obviously in the rest of Africa. So it's a base where we're doing our research, but in a broad sense, it's obviously impacting areas that are endemic for rabies beyond just a few countries.
What does it look like? Describing just a day for the vaccination team.
Looking at what vaccination day looks like for a vaccination team depends on what type of vaccination strategy one uses, and this is something we're looking at in Tanzania. So the traditional vaccination strategy is a centralized team-led approach where you have a team of vaccinators, maybe three or four, who stay in a town, a localized town where vaccines can be stored in refrigeration units, and then in the morning they will put vaccines into a mobile refrigeration unit in the back of their four-wheel drive vehicle, and they will drive maybe 30 or 40 minutes to a village where they will have organized for a mass dog vaccination campaign to happen that day. Probably the day before, someone has been around that village with a loudspeaker announcing that tomorrow is going to be rabies vaccination day, bring your dogs. And so at about 8:30 in the morning, the team arrive, they set up a little clinic underneath a tree, maybe in the center of the village, somewhere shady, and they'll get a table out, and one person will be responsible for registering people as they come with their dogs, and another two people maybe will be responsible for vaccinating dogs. And people will begin to turn up. Often children are employed to bring the dogs, and they will bring them anyhow they can, because families have seen rabies, they're frightened of rabies, and they're very grateful for rabies campaign, vaccination campaigns coming through. And so then they start queuing up and they have their dogs vaccinated, and it all turns into a bit of a community event. And it goes on and on through the day. It's quite long, dry, hot, repetitive work. And then eventually, say 2, 3, 4 in the afternoon, the numbers coming start to thin out, and eventually they call it a day and go home. And so that's one way of vaccinating dogs. And so this novel approach, which we're trying in Tanzania, is whereby we're going to store vaccines in those local communities, so that, and have a local representative in the community who's responsible for managing those vaccines. And so they know where all the dogs are in the community, and people can indeed come to them. And that person can vaccinate dogs throughout the year, because they're storing the vaccines there through the year. So that's one of the big differences between these two strategies. In the centralized team-led approach, each village only gets rabies vaccination once a year, you see, so because the team only comes once a year, whereas with the decentralized approach, the vaccines are there throughout the year. So any new litter of pups that is born can hopefully be vaccinated, and dogs, it'll hopefully result in a higher proportion of dogs in the village being immunized against rabies. So there are these two slightly different strategies, and they have slightly different daily activities associated with them.
I could add on to that and say, for a country like Kenya that's trying to do elimination at a national level, there cannot be teams available, to constantly go vaccinating. So it's a slightly different approach. So what they do is you mobilize a lot of vaccinators during a short period of time and try and vaccinate as many dogs as is possible. And to give an example, so Felix mentioned that dogs are often brought by children. And if you sort of compared how many dogs are brought by children and adults, you can see a big proportion is by children. And if you did vaccinations where perhaps children are in school, you end up with really small numbers of dogs vaccinated. So the approach is to find out which are the appropriate times that mass dog vaccination campaigns would happen. We choose school holidays, so as the small boys and girls are at home and can bring the dogs. And because you have just about 2 or 3 weeks, you spend 2 or 3 days prior vaccination going around villages and announcing that there will be a big mass dog vaccination happening at a specific station at a specific time. And then all the dogs are brought at that time, and then you can mobilize 40, 50 vaccinators who, for that period of time of 3 or 4 days, they're just going from station to station vaccinating dogs. And within a period of 2 weeks, you have vaccinated 70,000 dogs or 80,000 dogs. And that's one big approach in which, if you think about how do you vaccinate, you know, like 1 million dogs every year, then it has to be, you have to have quite some clever ways of concentrating your efforts and working together with even volunteers.
About how long has this program been going on?
Yeah, so I think it's good to mention that the control of rabies has happened for many years. In fact, if you look at historical data on rabies control, we were doing, as a country, we were doing perfectly well in the 70s, and we almost eliminated the disease. And then there was a huge change in the way veterinary services were provided. And the end result was that they privatized veterinary services and some areas could not get proper veterinary services. And then the disease surged again and has become endemic over years. So I think the problem is not that there has not been control of rabies. It has been that there has not been a systematic control with an aim of elimination. And so the elimination program for Kenya only began in 2015. So when we developed a strategic plan, which Washington State University, ourselves, Sarah Cleveland, Felix Lancaster helped develop for Kenya, and then made sure that government was in line with that, and they adopted it and made it a national elimination coordination, elimination plan.
If you are just joining us, my guests are two veterinarians working on the Rabies Free Africa project. Dr. Felix Lancaster is working in Tanzania, and Dr. Thumbi Mwangi is working in Kenya.
What is the success rate of these programs? I mean, are you seeing a difference in the past years and in the rate of rabies in dogs? Has it been significant improvement?
I could speak for the pilot counties and maybe add that so far we're just speaking about vaccinating dogs. The right. program, however, is about vaccinating dogs and also making sure that people who get bitten receive post-exposure prophylaxis in time. The only way we can tell whether we are making progress is you vaccinate the dogs, but also have a really nice surveillance system that can tell you whether you're making progress. We have been having a surveillance program there. We haven't seen any human case yet, but that is based at the community level. Now, for us to declare that Makueni is free of rabies, there has to be a stronger surveillance program that also looks at say encephalitis cases at the health facility and confirm that those cases are not out of rabies. So we can see progress in the reduction of numbers of rabies cases in dogs. We can see from the community there's not much reports of human cases. We need to have a much more strengthened surveillance system for us to verify and validate that, you know, we are getting to elimination in that area. That's only one of 47. So to make progress to the 47, we is a bit more work. And we think that's something that we can achieve in the next 7-8 years.
So what about Tanzania?
The thing about rabies is that where mass dog vaccination activities are carried out, you tend to see improvements or reductions in the incidence of human rabies relatively quickly. And it's very rewarding as a result. But the problem is if you stop those activities, then rabies will come roaring back because the vaccinated dogs will eventually die and unvaccinated dogs will be born and dogs will move into the area and rabies will spill back in and all your gains will be lost. And so where we are working in around the northwest of Tanzania, yes, there's been a significant reduction in the incidence of rabies in dogs and wildlife and livestock and people. But outside of our areas, rabies remains a major problem. And so what we're looking to do is try to sort of replicate what is happening in Kenya, or beginning to happen in Kenya, in which disease-free areas are created so that you can then move away from this situation where you need to vaccinate dogs every single year. And you can move towards surveillance that is just making sure that there is no rabies in that area. And if there is, then you can do reactive vaccination campaigns. And then to keep those disease-free zones free of disease, you just need to keep vaccinating around the edge and increasing the size of those disease-free areas until they coalesce into an even larger disease-free area. And you eventually will be able to declare a whole region free from rabies. And so that is the long-term goal. But at the moment, we're very much still in the situation where that we have little pockets of activity which are isolated. And within those pockets, there is clear impact from the activities. But outside of those pockets, rabies remains.
Christy just put in the chat something that I don't understand. So I'll ask you. And she says, it might be a good time to ask about the 0x30 initiative.
So the World Health Organization and the World Organization for Animal Health, the OIE, and the Food and Agriculture Organization of the United Nations, which are all bodies interested in the health of people in different ways and the health of animals, plus another organization called the Global Alliance for Rabies Control, came up with this support for a global goal for the elimination of dog-mediated human rabies by the year 2030. Now, that initiative is what is referred to as 0x30. So the idea is that by 2030, we don't have a single person dying out of dog-mediated human rabies. And it's a big goal, but it's a goal that has to be implemented, not just globally, but from a national level and from a sub-national level. So like the efforts of Felix Lancaster and the team in Tanzania, starting the Serengeti area, achieve that, and then move to the rest of the country until Tanzania is free of rabies. Similar for Kenya, rabies-free Kenya. I think the evidence that we have got from these countries is that it is possible. And then have that kind of advocacy going to governments and to other organizations that can support this cause. The same way we have done with polio, smallpox, there must be this massive focus on a disease to eliminate it. And that's the part, I think, as Washington State University, we are playing within East Africa.
And just to add to that, what is also really important about this tripartite commitment between the World Health Organization and the World Organization for Animal Health and the FAO is that it's the coming together of the human health community, the animal health community, in a One Health approach. And rabies is really a very good example of a One Health disease because it's a disease of animals that has massive impacts on human health. And to solve this problem, you can't just rely on the human health sector and you can't just rely on the animal health sector. They need to be integrated and coordinated. And so we were very pleased as a rabies control community with the coming together of the WHO, the OIE and the FAO with this tripartite commitment, because it really was necessary to show that this integrated approach was required on a national and international level to tackle this disease.
Wow, it's nice to see that level of cooperation. So yeah. In this work that you're doing, I'm just wondering about some of the challenges and what are some of the things that are of greatest need for you? What sorts of things really would help to further this goal?
I think the really important thing is to have domestic ownership of these programs, because it's a massive job. It's a massive job to vaccinate dogs systematically in every corner of a country until you have the disease, you know, no more there. I think what I see as really critical is the support of the international community, and we are seeing that with the tripartite agreement with WHO, FAO, and OIE, and being able to convert that kind of commitment to national commitment. So as individual governments of places that are endemic for rabies are able to commit their own resources, not just in the provision of vaccines and vaccine delivery for dogs, but also vaccine delivery for humans when you're bitten, community awareness and education, and improved surveillance programs that can help us track and monitor progress.
What also would be a real bonus for the rabies control community would be for an organization to take up global rabies elimination as their project's overarching objective, much like polio elimination has been really taken up by the Rotary Foundation, with guinea worm eradication, it's the Carter Foundation. And when these organizations really take interest in one particular program, they can really help to drive forward efforts on an international scale. And they often have funding from philanthropists that really want to get behind a single sort of issue. And I think rabies elimination would really benefit from that type of support, because, I mean, we're not talking about a huge amount of money relative to the control of, for example, malaria or TB or other major diseases. We're talking of it's going to be a relatively straightforward program to try to drive forward elimination efforts for rabies, because the reservoir host is the domestic dog, so it's quite accessible. We have vaccines that are 100% effective. The science is pretty much there. We know what we need to do. It's just about getting the levels of vaccination up. And you know, your question was what would really benefit the work of rabies elimination. I really think if we could get someone out there really inspired by the idea of making it their legacy to drive forward the global elimination of human rabies, then we would make massive strides forward very quickly. One of the problems that we face is getting vaccinations to domestic dogs in remote areas. And so we've been looking at novel and interesting approaches to reaching hard-to-reach communities. And we carried out a program a couple of years ago with some funding from the Gates Foundation, in which we thought it might be an interesting and clever idea to couple together the mass vaccination of dogs with the mass deworming of children. So in these remote communities, deworming of children happens twice a year. And there are teams from the human health community that visit these remote communities and deliver deworming medication to children. So we thought, well, if those teams are already going to these communities, I wonder whether the communities would be supportive of having a veterinary component to the team vaccinating their dogs at the same time. And so we carried out a study to see, firstly, whether it was popular and acceptable to communities to have an animal health intervention linked with a human health intervention. I mean, would they bring their children and their dogs at the same time, for example, to an intervention? And secondly, whether coupling these interventions together, whether that had a negative impact on the coverage achieved and the proportion of children dewormed and the proportion of dogs vaccinated. And what we found was that, firstly, that these integrated animal and human health interventions were hugely popular, and the main reason they were popular was because of people talked about saving time. They only needed to go to one intervention rather than two on two separate days, so they were very keen to save the time. And then we also found that the proportion of dogs vaccinated and the proportion of children that received deworming treatment was the same in villages that received the integrated intervention as those villages that received the intervention separately. So indicating that by integrating human and animal health intervention, it didn't have a negative impact on the proportion of animals or people treated, which was great. So that was just a really nice example of how, thinking outside the box, we can develop cost-effective approaches to delivering vaccinations to remote areas in a sort of cost-effective manner. And it was a really nice program.
I could add to that. In the human history, I've only managed to eradicate two diseases. One is in humans, which is smallpox, and the other one is rinderpest. Now, the work of eradicating rinderpest, particularly in Africa, has a big impact up to today. A lot of the veterinary surveillance programs and departments were actually developed as a way of trying to help veterinary departments manage rinderpest eradication. Now, the investments that we're making in rabies elimination have big impact, not just on rabies itself, but also on the systems that you're working with. So one good example is the way we find out cases in the community is through contact tracing. Contact tracing is now a really common word, even with the COVID-19 pandemic. The modeling, rabies elimination requires mathematical modeling, those techniques, and those are the same techniques that we have needed to use for COVID-19. So, for example, I work on rabies elimination in Kenya. When COVID-19 came in Kenya, I was asked to chair the COVID-19 modeling teams so as we can, have public health responses for the country. Now, these are investments done for an endemic, neglected tropical disease, but as you can see, they have impact on even new things that we don't know that are going to come to us, like COVID-19. So it's not just the strengthening of health systems through the elimination of one disease. I think there are many other secondary benefits, inclusive of what I think Felix has very ably described regarding deworming and delivering mass dog vaccinations together.
Why do you do this? Why do you keep on doing what you do?
That's a good question. I think as a veterinarian, we have a lot of infections and diseases that you can deal with. Like Felix mentioned in one of his statements, rabies has very quick rewards. So I can comfortably say that with the right investments that in my lifetime, I can see rabies elimination happening where I am. So it's a big motivator to know that this is not an ending hole. It's actually a journey that you can go and see the end of. So, and to know that, like I mentioned earlier on, that there is only a window when you can make an impact in somebody's life, and that window is at the vaccinating of the dog. Because if then, they get clinical signs of rabies, then there's nothing that you can do. So I think that it even motivates me that there's an available solution that I can help push for.
That's wonderful.
For me, as we've touched on, rabies, human rabies is, even though it's a disease of people that has terrible impacts on public health, it's really a veterinary disease. And both Thumbi and I are both veterinarians. And of all the diseases out there, this is probably the most important veterinary disease for public health. And so that's one of the main reasons why we focus on this disease. The veterinary community has to take a lead on this one. And we're in a position to do that. And it's absolutely atrocious that human rabies is still a problem to over half of the world's population, given that Louis Pasteur first invented the rabies vaccine back in the 1880s, and the vaccine hasn't changed enormously since that time. So, you know, it really is a terrible indictment that we still have children, tens of thousands of children dying of one of the most horrific and ancient diseases every single year. And with a little bit of investment and a little bit of political will, we can really drive this disease to the edge of the cliff and kick it off.
Yes, let's kick rabies off the cliff. September 28th is World Rabies Day. It is celebrated annually to raise awareness about rabies prevention and to highlight progress in defeating this horrifying disease. September 28th also marks the anniversary of Louis Pasteur's death, the French chemist and microbiologist who developed the first rabies vaccine. The vaccine to prevent rabies has been around for more than 100 years. It is a proven method for preventing both human and canine rabies. That is why human death from canine rabies in the developed world is virtually non-existent. The challenge arises in countries with insufficient veterinary infrastructure and financial investments required to vaccinate enough dogs to break the rabies transmission chains. For more information on the programs discussed in this conversation, you can go to rabiesfreeafrica.org. Your veterinarian also has more information about rabies and how to control it. Thank you for joining us.